The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's happening, guys? Happy Tuesday! And thank you for joining another special episode of You're Welcome. I'm sorry that I missed you all on Friday. I was at ESPN covering UFC 304, which we're going to get to in today's program. Guys, coming up, I'm going to give you my brilliant idea for what Bilal Muhammad should do next. Plus, I'm going to tell you where I think Patty the Pimlet belongs in the rankings. A lot to get to today, boys and girls. Let's begin here. Bilal Muhammad and Leon Edwards was awesome.
Am I wrong about that? Do you guys disagree with that?
Dana did not seem as though he thought it was awesome. And, okay, but that's a high scale, right? Like, that's probably the strongest word that I know. Awesome. Well, where can we come down to? And we come down a couple words, and then we end up on okay. And then we get all the way, a couple more words, and then we get to bad.
So where within that sliding scale do you guys see this? I thought it was awesome. Now, I also, awesome is unexpected. I know the storylines.
I don't find that awesome. I'm the little old lady in Iowa. I turn the TV on. I don't know who anybody is. It gets, and this is the fight I watch, right? I don't argue for you that this was Bonner versus Griffin, where you can have mute on and not know anything about anything and go, wow.
But I did have those storylines, and so did you. There was a sold-out arena. There was people watching around the world on pay-per-view that did have those storylines. So in the people of the group, not the little old lady from Iowa example, the us, the hardcores, thought it was awesome.
Knowing the backstory, knowing that they had already fought once, I don't fully understand the dismissal of the eye poke stoppage. Like, I knew who the baddest dudes were in my junior high and my high school. Don't you? Okay, great. I never saw them fight for 7 or 8 minutes. I knew within 30 or less, as long as those fights last, I knew who was who. So for some reason, when we get to the pros, or we look at Leon Blahal specifically, they had a completed round. We had 3 expert judges. We had a world to watch. We had 2 contestants in there. There was nobody that disagreed. Leon had won that part of the fight. Well, that part of the fight was 7 minutes. That's a long fight. And you wonder who saw it differently? You guys. I must give you guys a pat on the back here. You guys represented that you thought there was something more from Muhammad. You thought either Bilal had gotten better or that first fight was starting to trend in his direction. But the odds. My own partners at DraftKings, I argued with. I told them, hey, this is even money. Negative 180 to plus 155. That was as of last week. When this fight action went off, it was just under 2-1. But I'm still citing for you. Really? Really? You got a guy that already beat a guy in the one completed round that they had. And now he's getting a fight at home. Like, you remember everything that Leon was going on at that time when he fought Bilal the first time? Like, if anybody in our industry felt COVID, I mean, if anybody really, boy, this shutdown and these lockdown laws, what are we going to do? It was Leon. So now you remove those things. You bring the guy to him. You go from an empty Payx to a sold out. Don't you see that advantage, Leon? Because you guys didn't. You guys didn't. You guys saw this one. You saw it a lot clearer than I did. But maybe that speaks to my enjoyment. Maybe that spoke to my enjoyment to watch Bilal come out in the very first round, cut off the cage, Khabib him. When I talk about Khabib, Khabib took people down, but what was missed is he never took him down in the center of the octagon. He never took him down on those 3 little letters, UFC. He took him down on the fence 100% of the time. He took them into the fence. That was step one. Step two was to get a hold of him. It was in that order, so it would just seem as though
instead of having to worry about Khabib taking me down, I just got to keep my back off the fence. And I share that with you because that's what I meant when I said Blahal goes out and Khabib's him. But then later on in the fight, what Blahal is bragging about was his boxing. He didn't brag about the wrestling in the post-fight press conference. He was bragging about that jab. He was bragging about slipping that into an uppercut. He had compared himself to Canelo Alvarez. Very interesting. Very interesting because it speaks to mindset. Guys can get better. That fight 3 years ago against Leon for Blahal, he had time to get better. And he did things that would represent getting better. He went to Dagestan. He found a new mentor within Khabib. He worked with his own team, but he got some skills. He came back. You could at least, if you're telling the story, identify some specific things that happened. And I've seen guys get better. I watched Big Mouth get better. He went out to the AKA for a week. He didn't even go live. They just showed him some positions and techniques. He took that back home. He worked on it. And all of a sudden, he's not the guy that's easy to take down. Like, I've seen guys get better. I just offer you that as an example. I haven't seen anybody get better since my time in watching in 1993 in two areas. I haven't seen that. Lahal, who couldn't take Leon down, all of a sudden can take Leon down constantly. I won't call it at will, but he constantly took him down. Blahal, who never kept Leon down, all of a sudden he can keep him down. Blahal, who couldn't outpunch or kick Leon, all of a sudden outpunches and kicks Leon. Blahal, who did not outwork Leon, all of a sudden can outwork him. It was like he got better everywhere. He really got better everywhere. And there is a testament to believing. And believing where you want to be, where you want to be with believing and confidence, it is so misrepresented when it's talked about. You do not, if it's a pie chart, that you don't need that whole pie filled in. As a matter of fact, you don't want it filled in because then you don't have any room for fear. You got that whole pie chart is blue. You don't have that little red sliver anywhere. You don't have any room for urgency. And you want to have just enough belief and just enough confidence that it hinges right there with hope. You don't want to have a guy that's any further than that. But when I do look at Blahal, the way he built to this fight, the fact that he went out there and fought Brady, who was younger, undefeated on an undercard, this is a main event guy. It's not a question of if Blahal can get a fight with Leon. He already got the fight. It's not a question of if Blahal can get a fight with Leon in a main event. He already fought him in a main event. The question is, can he get him when Leon has the belt? And the answer was always no. No, he can't even get the fight. So everything that he went through to get here, to be in this moment where his feet are to the fire, man, you've been talking this way, you've been talking for 3 years, and now's the time. That's a lot to ask of somebody, and it's a lot to think a guy's going to show up and show out better than he's ever performed before. Like, out comes between them boys. Their own coaches and trainers will tell you that, right? There's things that we're never going to talk about or work on in the gym because we can't. I can't work on your grit. I can't work on your heart. I can't work on your mental toughness and your focus, and can you stay out there and do this for 25 minutes? I can only work on you on certain skills, which are really nothing more than an idea. So then you have a guy like Muhammad that can go out and do it, and he can do it nonstop, and he can do it for 25 minutes, not to mention they were trading back and forth. I mean, Leon won two rounds, for sure. And the first round was close. So now even when the decision comes, you got a little bit of a ball up in the air. The biggest tell that I had as a fan who was winning, like those two, the two guys fighting, they always know. They know who's winning in the moment. They know when the fight is over. They don't always know if the judge has got it right, but they know. And the biggest tell that I had that this fight is not as close as some might have thought was Leon going on the sprint in the final round. When Leon got on top and he opened up with that elbow and he started teeing off, he was looking for a finish. He wasn't just looking to hurt him. He was looking for a finish because he knew the math is against me. That's when I knew, right in that moment when Leon was trying to finish him with everything he had. Oh my God, Leon's losing this fight. I wasn't sure. I was like, hey, this is back and forth. Who did win the first round? I wasn't sure. I was sure in that moment that Leon, the champion of the world, believed he was losing that fight. And I mean, I just got to tell you, at the end of that contest, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I really did. There was a part of me that was happy for Blahl. Like, not a lot of people get to experience that feeling, having that belt wrapped around your waist, right? Having Daniel Cormier mispronounce your name. Like, right? But it's one of those things, like, you'll never forget that moment. Maybe that added to it. Maybe that clouded my memory. Maybe it was you guys telling me Blahl could win when I was thinking that Leon had this. I mean, maybe that's part of it. But I would like you to answer this question. It's not rhetorical. I'm going to go check your comments. I'm probably even going to put a poll up on my community page on YouTube. And I just want to know. I thought that fight was awesome. Am I wrong? What do you do with Blahl? Where do you go from here? There was a resistance to put him in a main event of a pay-per-view to begin with. Now, this is a promotion. So, let's take it at its word, which you should. This is promotion, okay? This is called demotion. When you're going up, you're being promoted. When you're coming down, you're being demoted. Now, the reason I point that out to you is there's not a lot of room when you're a main event title fight. Oh, by the way, you win. You're the reigning champion of the world. There's not a lot of room. We've seen people slide. But, like, we have to be able to not make a world champion a co-main event. We have to be able to sell out an arena and draw attention to a world champion, somebody other than the top spot, or else what are you going to do with Valentina Shevchenko, right? Like, it's one of those things. You can't just be the main event because you're the champion. But boy, it gets you close. I mean, it gets you real close. So, but we have to keep that in mind, because when we talk about what are we going to do with Blahl Muhammad, before you jump forward and you tell me Rakhmonov. Now, if you really had the power of the pen and you really understood this isn't just about having a fist. Did I tell you guys about Maceo Parsons, by the way? Did I tell you this guy's in his first year of wrestling? He's winning matches. He gets so embarrassed, but I can see him. I want him to know that we're proud of him. What do you do with a guy who's your world champion, who already fought in a main event, who already was a part of a sold-out arena? Do you demote him? Can you demote him? I get that you can do anything. I get that we fiercely adhere to the rules that we make up as we go. No, probably not. That's probably your more realistic answer. Okay, great. But when you have that in mind, and you know, I don't just need pay-per-views on fight night worldwide. I need to get good ratings for my press conference. I have something called a ceremonial weigh-in, which, by the way, is a television show that I would like people to watch. I got to put a poster out, and I don't want to have to put their names bigger than their faces. I want people to see the faces and know what the names are. So would you really put Rakhmonov into that spot? Like, which one of those things do you feel gets knocked out of the park? I know it wasn't your press conference. In fact, you're probably going to have to not do it. You're going to probably have to switch to a media scrum. I know that your ceremonial weigh-in isn't going to be great. When Joe Rogan hits the stage and he comes in and does an interview, it's not going to be like the sought-after everybody-be-quiet moment. So would you really make that fight? And you're going to have to answer that. Somebody's going to have to answer that. And they're not in an envious position. Because if you don't make the fight that is required per the integrity of the sport, you also have a problem. Right? It's just a very difficult thing to do. If you find something else for Blahal to do, you simultaneously have to find something else for Rakhmonov to do. And all you're doing is delaying the inevitable. If for Rakhmonov, next fight is anything like his previous 17 and he goes out and wins by finish. Like, if any parts of those are true, then you're going to have to put him in that match anyway, so why wait, right? Like, all of these things are going to be considered. I go down this road because I believe, while you are saying Rakhmonov, which is a great choice, by the way, I believe if you were actually in the position to make it, that probably isn't the fight that you go with. So if it's not, who do you have him fight? Now, I'm going to steal a suggestion from Dean Thomas, but I loved it. Laura Sanko heard it. She's quickly co-signed. We all like the idea. I think you're going to like it. Are you guys ready for this? And you know, I would do anything to get Colby in that spot. I would do anything for that parody and find a way to get Colby in to that position. And I don't believe that I can do it now. So I'm being real fair, right? I'm putting my cards on the table. Are you ready? Kamaru Usman. You put Blahal in there with Kamaru Usman. And if you tell me no, just like with Rachmaninoff, if you tell me no, you not only need something for Blahal to do that you can sell to the public, you need something for Rachmaninoff to do, which you got to be able to sell to the public. And I could see a scenario very easily where you put Kamaru Usman against Rachmaninoff. I don't know that I can see anything that avoids that round robin I just listed for you. I understand the O in Ian Gary's record. But I don't know that Ian Gary is actually chomping at the bit to move into a five-round atmosphere. I don't know that he's not. But I'm sharing for you, like, to get that fight, someone's going to have to step forward and say it's mine. And I don't believe that Ian Gary is going to do it, not to mention he doesn't have to, right? Like, in the world of showing that you have balls and courage, he already says Shavkat's name. Like, his hands are clean. But when you're looking around that division, my goodness, you got Ian Gary. He's a top-ranked guy. The number six guys, he's somewhere just like that. He's a top-ranked guy with an undefeated record. You have Rachmaninoff. What's he ranked, guys? He's got to be number one. He's got to be. He's got, without even looking at the rankings, he's got to be. If I'm wrong, he's number two. You get my point, with an undefeated record. So you have these hammers. But that's all got to come in line in conjunction with the calendar. There's just so many things that have to match up. And if anyone's going to understand about you're going to have to do this to get to that, and it's not as simple as looking over here. If anyone's going to get that, it's Blahal Muhammad. So Leon did not position himself, in my mind, in a way where you could turn to a rematch in a trilogy fight. And that normally would have been an option. There was ways to make that the option in the direction you're going. I don't feel he did that. I feel like that ship has sailed. And I think that Rachmaninoff's in a very interesting spot. I mean, I think of the entire diatribe I just gave you, the most interesting piece there is Rachmaninoff, because I believe Rachmaninoff fights Blahal Muhammad, according to you most, unless you listen to my logic and you realize we can't put him in a title fight, and that lands him with Kamaru Usman. Or you do, in fact, listen to my logic, and you find a way to get Usman in there with Muhammad. Like, it's a very interesting spot, but we've still identified the players. And Usman, I don't know that he'll speak up. Like, there's some nudging that has to happen. And Usman speaking up doesn't just involve Usman going after Muhammad. Usman, by default, is now in a proxy war that will be done through propaganda in the media and nothing else. And Usman's opponent right now is a Blahal. His opponent is Rachmaninoff. So Usman needs to be real careful that he doesn't challenge Rachmaninoff, that he makes his case with you, the public, as to why he should be in front of Rachmaninoff. And I just love that idea, guys. I want him to win. I want Usman to win this argument. I love Dean's idea. I want to see Blahal Muhammad against Kamaru Usman. Goodness. Oh, John Jones. John Jones, Tom Aspinall. Yes, please. Right, guys? But where are you at on this? See, there's more than meets the eye here. I know you want to see Aspinall. I know that you want to see Jones. I know that that's your answer. But if I can remember, or if I can remind you to try to remember, 1 week ago, you didn't. 1 week ago. If you had the power of the pin, you got John Jones in one corner, you could bring him any opponent that you want. You weren't bringing him Stipe Miocic, not a week ago. That was a year ago. A week ago, you were bringing him Alex Pereira. And during the course of last week, you got a step closer to that, which was John Jones and Stipe booked on the same night as Alex Pereira. That was not a mistake. If anything had happened to Stipe, as sure as night follows day, Alex Pereira was going to be moved into that spot. But I think if you had that same power of the pin now, you don't make that match. I think that you make Tom. As a matter of fact, I'll go a step further. I don't believe if something happens to Stipe, they're going to insert Alex Pereira, even though they've already booked him and even though it's that date. I think they're going to bring in Tom. And it just speaks to, right, there's a larger point here, which it speaks to how quickly things change And you know what? That's not fair to John. But there's nothing you can do. We don't do fair in this sport, but it's not fair to John. As superior of an athlete as John has been to the rest of the boys, he's just like the rest of the boys mentally, from his intrinsic value that he's seeking to the motivation that he must find. He's just like him. He would like to do something that's difficult. He would like to be recognized in it. He would like to be paid. He'd like to be the last fight of the night. He'd like those things. But he would give both of those things back for a pat on the back. And this is the one thing, this is the wrestler mentality, where you go out and you do something for so long and you're not getting anything for it. As a matter of fact, you're paying to be able to do it. Well, you do get something. And it's not the medal. Even if you try to convince yourself of it, it's not the recognition or the All-American status. It's the pat on the back. You will come into practice and you will get tortured for 2 hours a day, every day, as long as that coach tells you, good job, on your way out the door. And I'm sharing that with you because it's exactly what John did. This isn't maybe. This isn't Chael's opinion. It's happened right in front of you. John was not getting those same pat on the back at 205 pounds. It was believed that he had cleared out the division. It was believed that there wasn't very much interesting. He gave a world title back because that pat on the back was so damn important to him. He gave a world title back, took 3 years, moved into a division, just so, for the first time in a long time, somebody could question how this match was going to go, and therefore, if it goes John Way's, they would tell him, good job. They would recognize him. He moves into heavyweight. He agrees to fight Francis Ngannou, whether you guys have been armed with that or not. He agreed to fight Francis Ngannou. That whole John was, that is false. But then it gets said that he would never fight Sergey Pavlovich, and Sergey goes down and said that he would never fight Tom Aspinall. John's looking around going, man, I'll fight these guys right now. You didn't even tell me you wanted to see that fight. You're asking me why I'm fighting Stipe instead of Sergey or Tom. You never brought up Sergey or Tom at the time I was presented with who is said to be the greatest heavyweight the UFC's ever had is Stipe Miocic. That's who I signed to fight. You're telling me, this is John talking, right? You're telling me you want to see me take the absolute hardest fights. Well, when I signed the contract, this is the guy that you told me was the absolute hardest fight. And now people are taking that from him. They're taking it from him. And that's a hard spot to be in. I could only imagine. I got that same wrestler mentality. Whether it was Roy Pittman or it was Clayton Hires, it was almost abusive the way practices were. They were so difficult. You're on your knees. You're vomited into buckets. You're so tired. You get nothing for it. But you'll come back tomorrow because those people you respect told you, good job. It's a really interesting thing that you do think about it from that perspective because, see, Tom called John out over the weekend. And it was a very sheepish call out. And by sheepish, I just mean it was polite. Like, there are cage fighters. And then there are mixed martial artists. And Tom is a martial artist. And that is very evident just of the fact that his father is in his corner passing that tutelage down. That's very Gracie-esque. But that is a martial artist. So a martial artist will do a call out in a very polite way, which is what Tom did. And for any other heavyweight to break in there right now is tough. I don't want Tom to paint himself in a corner. Opportunity happens. He became the world champion in November of last year at Madison Square Garden because opportunity presented himself, not because of the rankings and or the bout agreements. So if Tom is going to hedge on something that's already happened, right? It was lightning in a bottle, but he already caught it once. Why can't he go back to Madison Square Garden in November, 1 year later, and catch something? If that is the game that he's playing to try to find himself opposite John, I think he's playing it right. I do. But if we're going to go by what the information that we have, we're only as good as the information that we're given. The information that we're given by Dana was, yes, Tom versus the winner of John and Stipe. Guys, we're talking about very realistically, for sure that's 2025, but very realistically, they're probably going to save that. That's probably not a February fight. It's probably not a March fight. That's probably going to get saved for International Fight Weekend of 2025. So if you're in Tom's shoes, that's a meaningful amount of time. I really do think, and I think Tom would agree with me if we had him here right now and said, hey, we can make this happen, but in a best case, I don't know if it will happen. We got to get a guy that said he's going to retire. We got to get him to agree. Oh, by the way, we got to get him past Stipe Miocic, which is not easy for anybody.
We got to get him healed. We got to play the venue game like anybody else. And then if it all works out, July of next year. Do you want that or would you like to see what's behind door B? I think Tom would say, I want to see what's behind door B. I want to stay busy. I want to do something else. But it is just such an interesting thing. Like, I don't really know how any other heavyweight's going to be able to break in there. Stipe's got the bout agreement. Poton wants the match and is a lot closer than you guys think. He was booked at Madison Square Garden, so if it just didn't have, he would have the match. Right, they were a lot closer to making that fight than possibly you're aware. But now all of a sudden you have Tom. And Tom's suggestion is I'll come out to Madison Square Garden, pull Ankalaev, put me in, I'll fight Poton. Well, he's the world champion. You can't fight him. I'm the champion too. It doesn't really matter to some people if you put light heavyweight or you put interim in front of it, or you put heavyweight or you put undisputed. If it ends in world champion, I'm one of those guys, man. That's good enough for me. And you know what? It'd be good enough for Piera, too. Piera, take that deal right now. Piera, take that deal, move up, see how we could do with Tom, and the winner draws into the winner of Jones and Stipe. It's a very exciting time. So now if you're another heavyweight and you're looking at the landscape and you're realizing Tom has something else to do, Tom is going to have to do something else. You not only have to get in front of one guy, you got to get in front of two, right? To get to John Jones right now, there's already a logjam. It's a logjam of world champions. Interim champions and light heavyweight champions. And it's just an interesting spot. Heavyweights is the perennial division, right? That's the belt Hulk Hogan had. That's the belt Muhammad Ali had. That's the belt Mike Tyson had. Mike Tyson and Muhammad Ali could have made the lower weight classes. They didn't want it because it's not the same prestige. Heavyweights. And we haven't had that here in the UFC in a long time. It has not been the featured and perennial division. And all of a sudden, what a difference. What an incredible difference we have. Now, before we unpack any of this, we're going to have to get halfway through the year of 2025 or there's a slip up at the Garden, which we're not going to cheer for. We're not going to cheer and hope something happens. So it's an interesting spot. It's a tough spot. And I think once we do calm down, right? Once we calm down, get a deep breath, start to look at things. We're not going to have a battle of Tom or Poton versus John. I think we're going to have to find somebody else for Tom. That's what I think. Tom's going to have to do something between now and then. And there's only one guy that jumps off the page, which is Cyril Gane. And I don't know how bullish I am on that idea. Because there's not a scenario where Cyril's going to get back in there with John Jones. Not after he laid down the first time. So it gets complicated, doesn't it? But these complications, these arguments and discussions, this is why we're fans. This is literally what makes the sport fun. Any athlete who competes at the highest level will tell you the importance of having a great team. Even in individual sports like boxing, wrestling, MMA, there is always a team of coaches and training partner who helped you get to the top. Think about Simone. Think about Serene. Think about Tiger. Think about Mike Tyson, Mayweather. They all have a coach. And the same thing goes with business. You need a solid team of trusted and knowledgeable people to help you advance if you're in the e-commerce business. Let Shopify be that teammate that helps you level up. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going through. Businesses that sell more, sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/chail, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/chail, like the famous gangster, to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/chail. Men, when we leave the house, it's phone, wallet, keys, and how does my hair look? But if you're experiencing hair loss like the majority of the male population does, you may not be so confident when you step outside your door. It's time to get that confidence back and restore your hair with Hims. Hims provides access to a range of hair loss treatments that actually work, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted treatment options and clinically proven ingredients that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. They offer personalized, chewable oral spray and serum treatment options so you can find what works best for you. Reaching out for help in this area can feel a bit embarrassing, but Hims has made this process so dignified and simple. All you have to do is answer a few questions online and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to your door. No in-person visits to the doctor or pharmacy are needed. The whole process is 100% online. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, so if you feel like you're losing a part of yourself with your hair loss, get Hims and get that confidence back. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/chael. That's Hims. HIMS.com/chael, like the famous gangster. For your personalized hair loss treatment options, HIMS.com/chael. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Do you think it's true that we underestimate Patty Pimblett because he looks like a 14-year-old girl? Now, before you give me too much credit for that extremely funny line, it's his. Patty said it. Patty said they're underestimating because I look like a 14-year-old girl. Now, that's funny, but let's just stay on that real fast. Is it true? And yeah, at least part of it, the underestimate part. I'm personalizing right now. I underestimated him. I have not seen anything from Patty the Batty yet that leads me to a conclusion that he cannot be a world champion. I haven't seen anything yet. And I've been looking for it. I've been looking from Jump Street. Patty the Batty was a funny guy, and he had a little bit of a gimmick. And I don't actually know what the Monkees are. That's a band from back when I was just a little kid. But I must have seen a picture of him somewhere because when I see Patty the Batty, I always think he looks like one of the guys from the Monkees. And I guess he said some pretty clever things. He was pretty quick with the tongue. And I thought he was a goof. And I don't know that I mean goof in a negative way. I think I was into it, but it was still for entertainment. Patty the Batty is here for entertainment. He's a regional guy. What does that mean? Well, he's got to start a specific region of the world, a specific geographical area, right? You keep him around England. Maybe we go over to Ireland. You bring him along, like this type of thing. He might get as far as Paris. He's going to sell some tickets. You can't put him with a strong counterpart. And you're not going to put him or ever get him to a ranking, but you could sell out a few venues with this guy and get a couple of good quips along the way, and he'll be washed up and done within 5 fights. That is just not the case. You got to understand how poorly Patty must have fought. I'm going back. He must have fought so poorly when he had to cut from 180 pounds down to 155 in 3 days. And he must be exhausted. He can be exhausted out there. And then he wasn't. He won that fight. Okay, fast forward a little bit, but you got to understand how poorly Patty must have fought to be harboring the grief of a death of a loved one. But when he went out there and fought, he compartmentalized, didn't show grief at all. He pushed through, he dealt with the competition, and then he moved on to grieving and revealed to us all that he was grieving in the first place.
Okay, but he must not have fought very well. Now I'm only taking you back 15 months to his last fight. I apologize, five months to his last fight. But he had been out for 11 months at that time with an ACL injury. And a guy that does not have the discipline to keep his physiology under control, who they're nicknaming Patty the Fatty, Fatty the Batty. Okay. But then he did look good. He did look like he had no skills. He did find a way to win. Well, then we give him the quick turnaround. And that's what Bobby Green was. In comparison to 11 months, right, he had a third of that time. So we turn him around. And we're going to fight him at home. And there's no home field advantage. It's home court disadvantage in this sport. And now we bring in a ranked guy. We bring in a hammer. We bring in a guy that's done main events. We bring in a guy that everybody recognizes. We don't have to sell and we have to tell people. We bring in a guy that walks second. And we find out that this hard draw came. The signing, the suggestion of this match, let alone the signing of a bout agreement, while there was a contract dispute, and we know the history of contract disputes. So, all right. Now we find out why, though. We find out why Patty's getting dealt from the bottom of the deck. Well, no. That was another thing that we had wrong. And I don't think Patty can stand with Bobby. Last week, Chael. Last time I spoke to you guys. I don't think he can stand with him. I've heard about his great groundwork, but you will hear people that make this mistake all of the time. They'll tell you how great somebody is with their groundwork, but then you find out it's the guard. It's like, well, no. If you're great on the ground like Bo Nickel, if you're great on the ground like Khabib, if you're great on the ground with the reversals like Damian Maya, but if you believe 1993 is going to reinvent itself and you're going to be on your back and beat anybody, it's not what's going to happen. So I don't believe, this is last week when I spoke to you guys, that if it was a straight-up grappling match, any way you want to do it, CGI rules, EBI rules, ADCC rules, collegiate rules, freestyle, Greco-Romo, any way that you want to do it, Bobby is going to win a grappling match against Patty. And I don't know that you guys would have disagreed with that. He's going to get a top, he's going to control position. And to see Patty be able to go on, I will tell you, there was some significant differences. Like, here, let me give you one real fast. Remember that Fatty the Batty comment? That didn't happen for this fight. In fact, Fatty the Batty didn't revisit us since he got out of the ring with Flash Gordon. Fatty the Batty wasn't there 5 months ago when he fought last. Fatty the Batty didn't come revisit in his camp. Fatty the Batty wasn't part of the story. Neither were the donuts, neither were the cookies, neither was the overeating. It seems as though Patty's gotten more disciplined. He didn't talk about that, though. You feel like you would. You feel like that would come out. A coach would bring that up. A trainer would bring that up somewhere along the way. A workout part. Hey, I see him in the gym more often. Nobody did bring it up, but we saw it, guys. And now you have Patty out there. And when I told you that I really did think that Bobby, first off, was the better grappler, any way you wanted, any rules that you wanted to, I also thought it was a big problem on his feet. Like, contrary to the way most minds would work, which goes something like this. Bobby Green is a pretty good fighter, but he's a great brawler. Well, Bobby Green's actually quite a technician. He just looks like a rough guy. So you think of brawler. He's actually quite a technician. And then the same goes for Patty, where you might think that he's a brawler, right? He's this British guy. He didn't really have a big grappling background. You might think he's a brawler. But you got this technical side. And so when Patty the Batty goes, and see, but this is all important to understanding what happened, because King Green is the one that chose to attempt to take this to the floor in the first place. And it was the attempt to take it to the floor. First off, he was finished on the floor. But second off, to even be in that position to be caught, to even engage in that area, was Bobby's choice. And he chose that because he wasn't comfortable on the feet with Patty. I think King Green is awesome. I heard from people through training camp, he had great preparation. But we can't quite recognize Patty for what he is, which is a guy who has shown nothing yet that would disqualify him from being a future world champion. We can't really understand that until we do understand that Bobby fought very well. Bobby prepared very well. Bobby is very good. King, I apologize, is very good. Once we understand that, then you can see what Patty did, because You might not know who was winning the striking battle. You might not know, but there's a tip of the hat between the boys. The tip of the hat between the boys, King Green thought Patty was. Or he thought he was awkward, or he was feeling something where he wanted to change it. And then when you understand that, and then you look at what Patty did, Patty didn't just submit him once, he submitted him twice. That arm bar was as good as an arm bar needs to be. Like, if a guy is awake and alert and everything's going on, that arm bar is enough in history to get guys to tap. You're only going to find a few exceptions. You're going to have to turn to John Jones versus Vitor Belfort to see an arm bar that's good where the other guy doesn't surrender. But he couldn't surrender because he was already unconscious. I mean, it really is a remarkable thing. I came from a wrestling background. For you wrestlers out there, you've got something that'll stop a match called a pin, and you've got something called a tech fall. But every now and then, a guy gets pinned while being technical falled. And that's largely what Patty did. He did a pin and a tech fall. He had an armbar on an opponent that was unconscious. He essentially not only beat him once, he beat him twice. What are you doing with Patty the Batty right now? Like, Patty the Batty was so surprised, like, oh, I got a ranking now. I was like, okay, first off, let me stop you right there. Why do you think you have a ranking? And the announcer said this too. And the pundits have said this too. Why are you saying he has a ranking? He does not. That is not true. As a matter of fact, even if it were, you wouldn't know, because the rankings don't come out until Tuesday morning at 9 a.m., of which is tomorrow. Why do you keep saying he has a ranking? Why does he think he has a ranking? Why, if you beat number 15, do you believe you become number 15? Now, if you are going to put Patty at number 15 because he beat King Green, then you've got to be able to tell me that you know 14 other guys that can whip his ass, or that you believe can. So I'm not arguing that I disagree that he's going to have a ranking. I don't disagree that he should have a ranking. I'm arguing, once again, against our 9 a.m. unnamed rankings committee. Like, they don't have to do that. You could watch number 15 go down and then quickly come to you and go, yeah, he shouldn't have been there. I never should have put him at 15. Bring somebody else in. It's not just because you beat a guy, you take the guy's spot. And that's the only part that, while I'm telling you it's not that way, it will be that way. So if we're going to live in Unreasonableville, which we do as it comes to rankings, why stop him at 15? If you didn't have him at 15 to start with, then you're already making a concession that you had the wrong list. There is a concession here that you aren't great at what you do. Right? You don't get to just bring him in and go, oh, he's 15 now, he beat number 15. No, it's not like that. He didn't get any better in the last few months or even in the last few weeks. So you either had a guy ranked too high to be number 15 to start with, or you had, and what I believe to be true, a guy not ranked high enough. So once you concede that you didn't do a great job, why stop at 15? Do you really believe that's where he is, or do you believe it should be 12? And you just don't have the balls to take number 12 who didn't lose and flip-flop him with number 15, for example. And it's a big deal. It's a big deal. Those numbers matter. And we've got three different sets of rankings, right? You got one through 15, but it doesn't work that way. First off, that list should only go to 10. Why would we go to 15? It should only go to 10. But then even within 10, you've got 1 through 5. Those are the title contenders. You got 6 through 10. Those are the ones that are interchangeable mediocrities. And then you have 11 through 15. So, I mean, I'm just sharing with you, if you're admitting that you got it wrong, which you did, if you're admitting you walked the wrong guy out second, which you did, don't be afraid to admit you got it really wrong, right? I mean, you can't really unfry that egg. So we either got to go one way or the other, which is a resistance to the idea that Patty becomes ranked because he beat a ranked guy. That's not true. There is no criteria anywhere that says that. And moreover, now that we know he is a top 15, are you sure we got to stop there? Because they made the same mistake with O'Malley. And I don't begrudge them for it, but they didn't have O'Malley ranked, and it was so blatantly an error that when they did rank him, they rank him number 10. That was so blatantly an error that with one win, he went from 10 to 1 and fought for a world title.
The guy that was ranked number 10 yesterday is now our number one contender fighting for a world championship. And there is not a time in the modern era where number 10 fought for a world championship. Even on last minute notice. Sean Strickland, when he did it as a replacement, was ranked 6. You can't go all the way to 10.
So now we have a concession that you guys have screwed up. We have a concession that you got them in the wrong order. But this is your chance to attempt to amend that.
So I'll ask you again, do you think, if you're going to put Patty at number 15, which everybody's saying is already done, and it's not, it doesn't even have to be done, by the way, but if you're going to do that, do you believe you know 14 guys that can whip his ass? And if you don't, then don't rank him there.
And this little unnamed rankings committee that I speak about, I actually know some of them.
And some of them would tell you right now, he's number 11. This is exactly where he should be. I know the sport inside, he should be number 11. Well, then why are you putting him at 15? Well, because he hasn't beaten 13, 14, or 12, and they haven't lost. I can't do that. Yes, you can. There is not a protocol. Khabib Nurmagomedov went from 2-1 because he asked for it. John didn't get beat. Anderson Silva went from number 4 to number 1 because Dana went to a press conference and said that's where he should be.
I don't begrudge these things. I'm saying if we're going to acknowledge it to a degree, and we are acknowledging that the rankings committee was wrong. They didn't have Patty ranked and they did have Bobby. And there's repercussions for that. That will directly affect any sponsorship contract you have, where you're ranked at.
It will directly affect your ability to negotiate when that time comes, of which was Wednesday of this last week for Patty, who had absolutely no ranking.
How's a guy with no ranking going to come in and argue anything? The hell are you going to argue when you don't even have a ranking to 15 and we shouldn't go beyond 10 anyway? So they do matter.
Who walks first, who walks second has a lot to do with visualization, not to mention it's a compliment and an honor. Are you red locker room or are you blue locker room?
It matters. All of these things matter, and you got it wrong.
Clearly, you got it wrong. So in your attempt to fix it, before 9 a.m. tomorrow morning, which only gives this video a few hours, are you sure you only want to fix it by moving him to 15? Are you sure about that? And if number 14 or number 13 hasn't lost yet, and therefore you can't take their spot away, Yeah, you can. And I think you should. All right, everybody, that's it for today's episode. Thank you for listening. And a shout out to Anthony, who left me a review on Apple Podcasts, which reads, "I've been listening to Chael for years, and I absolutely love everything Chael Sonnen. I always recommend his podcast to my friends." Well, thank you very much, Anthony. I appreciate those kind words. I appreciate your friends. I appreciate all the love from all of you, just like Anthony. And I want you to know I will be back on Friday. Until then, I'm Chael Sonnen. And you are welcome.
Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make high-quality clothing for a summer wardrobe you'll love, all made right here in the USA. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.